Welcome back to the weekly roundup for RCR Plus. I am your host, Dewa De Boer, and with me is William McGimsey. Welcome back, William.
Thanks, Dewa. Good to be here again.
And as always, we will cover the events of the last week in a roundup. And I'll just let everybody know that we are recording this 24 hours earlier than normal. So if something has come up in the last 24 hours, we won't be covering it. And the reason for that is that William is going to be debating or at a, I guess, on a panel at a free speech union event in Wellington. And that will have happened by the time you listen to this, but I'm hoping it will be recorded and we'll be able to share some of that with you in the future. And I believe the is the tour basically wrapped up this week with the Free Speech Union, or is there more to come?
That's something I should know and do not know. Maybe
That
we
that's
can.
all right. I saw on their events page their final event was going to be in Christchurch, which could be this Friday. So if you're listening to this on Friday, it's possible there is one final event for that in Christchurch. It may already have been, have finished. I like I said, I'm really hoping there will be some highlights that they will put out, and we will share those with you in due time. Now, straight into the domestic issues of the past week, and a lot of them fit under one big umbrella, and that is the war on woke. In particular, Winston Peters has declared war on woke. He's got a policy to remove, or rather, a members' bill to remove DEI from the Public Services Act that was introduced under the last Labour government, and it has caused quite a storm.
That's right. And now Christopher Luxon has announced that Judith Collins, the Public Services Minister, is going to review the Public Services Act and refresh it. And they'll be looking at New Zealand First's members' bill to see if they can take any of the ideas and policies in that bill and incorporate them into their refresh.
What's
So,
particularly interesting to me about this is that the current Public Services Act that made things terrible. If you look at the details, what Winston Peters is trying to remove around the requirements for these agencies to factor in all kinds of ethnic, gender, ability, and all kinds of basically. Representation and quotas, requiring all kinds of policies, something that filters down to anyone who has to interact with government agencies, with the public services, applied by councils as well. This legislation has only been around since 2020, so basically 5 years, just under 5 years, and it was actually, I believe, it was actually voted for by New Zealand First at the time. Was just part of their coalition agreement under Jacinda Ardern. I don't think they fully understood what was going on at the time. So this is quite an interesting shift where you had people who were going along with this, not really understanding the implications, now having become awakened to the actual damage that it's causing, and then taking responsibility to make sure that it's undone.
yes, but even prior to the these diversity and inclusion things being put into the Public Sector Act, I mean, I worked in the public sector over a long period of time, 15 years. There's a cultural problem in there that goes over and above any legislative requirements. And it's to do that they value this stuff independently of whether it's in the law or the policy or not. They have an internal ideological commitment to it. And I'm skeptical that merely removing this stuff from legislation is going to be enough to drive the policy changes. The types of people who get promoted within the public sector are, they're not always the most competent people. Often it's like the annoying ethnic person who always speaks up in meetings and says stuff that's kind of dumb. But that they like promoting people like that because they identify people who are willing to speak up as having leadership, and the quality or the correctness or the value of the thing they're saying seems to be secondary. And there's a lot of this type of stuff that goes on. Anytime you have ethnic, gender, sexual minorities who act in this way, where they speak up in meetings, regardless of the quality of the things that they're saying, they seem to be identified for promotion. And I mean, I really don't like this. I think the quality and the value and the things you say are more important than merely a willingness to speak up and speak out. It's the wrong type of qualities that they're identifying as being important for a promotion. And because they've promoted people like this into positions of leadership, you've got a lot of kind of dumb people in leadership positions who are dumb but who are good at, like faking it till you make it. And that's the type of people we have in many of the sort of management positions in the public service.
Yes, I think anybody who has interacted with that environment will be familiar with what you're saying. And it is a problem that is going to be hard to fix because simply removing it from legislation, as has been committed to, or well, it hasn't been committed to. And this is, of course, an interesting point to make, is that Christopher Luxon has said that he will look into it. And he has actually criticized woke in these interviews, which is quite contradictory for Luxon, because of course he's always talking about how he values diversity and inclusion, these same things that are part of the DEI policies. DEI is something that he's very proud of, and he has been proud of it during his work at Air New Zealand, for example. And so, even if he does commit to these legislative changes, because he's been critical of it, saying, we need to have competency, we need to have people who know what they are doing, there seems to be very little interest in following that through. From the we see the resistance that we've talked about from the public service, basically ignoring the government, doing the best they can to frustrate the government's plans and agenda. And it just seems largely like the public service is saying, oh well, we'll just wait them out. And as you pointed out, the legislation passed by Jacinda Ardern was really just formalizing what was already happening. Sort of what would you say then needs to happen if they are actually going to make a proper permanent change that's not just something that's going to be completely ignored?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be effective just to ask the public service not to promote people on the basis of diversity and to promote them on the basis of meritocracy. Now, I think you really have to have people who are personally committed to doing things in that sort of way. It's a cultural issue. The internal culture of the organization has to be driven by people, putting people in there who actually really believe in this stuff and are willing to act on it. So I think you have to have a turnover of personnel. You have to specifically bring in people who are committed to the new view and remove some of the people who are committed to the old view, and then empower them to actually drive change throughout these organizations from the top down. So you want to there's a lot of organizational strategies. There's lots of HR strategies. There's lots of documents that inform and there's workplace culture. All this stuff, a lot of effort has to be put into changing it so that these the DEI stuff, the woke stuff, and the diversity stuff doesn't hold sway in the way, that the internal workplace culture works. So, I mean, it's an interesting topic because, I mean, I actually think there's one sort of diversity that is really valuable, and that's a viewpoint diversity. Viewpoint diversity would be di people with different ideological opinions. And the thing is that the type of diversity that the public sector has, which is sort of ethnic, gender, sexual diversity, that seems to be inversely correlated with viewpoint diversity. So they have some ethnic, gender, and sexual diversity, but all the people from the diversity, not all of them, but a lot of them, they all share this woke view. And so that's just an interesting observation. I think the value of having viewpoint diversity is it keeps you honest, and it helps you. Yeah, no one has all the information, right? And no one way of thinking is necessarily right all the time. You have to have some humility, and humility in what you know, and interacting with these different ideological perspectives is a good way to keep you honest intellectually, and to make up for your weak spots and for your blind spots. And so I think there needs to be more viewpoint diversity within the public sector, and that we should aim to sort of more closely approximate the views of the ordinary New Zealander, rather than, you know, the rather than have the government sort of dominated by a woke ideology that most ordinary New Zealanders feel is sort of alien and kind of oppressive.
This will be very difficult to fix during the current term. It seems to be something that the coalition parties are only becoming aware of and becoming genuinely convicted of. Obviously, we've been talking about it probably for longer than they have been willing to act on it, but now it seems they are willing to act on it. At least enough of them are. David Seymour, Winston Peters, even Christopher Luxon to a lesser degree. So I'd like to point out in something for the listener, something for the audience. If you have some skills in this area, or you know people who have skills in this in these public sector areas, when there are vacancies coming up, or even if there aren't currently any vacancies, you need to be willing to step forward or encourage others to step forward. And it doesn't just work if one person goes in there and tries to fix these agencies, that there has to be a as William is pointing out, a proper supported effort where the politicians and the public servants are working together to make these cultural changes so that you're there to back up the politicians are there to back you up. And one small example in the last week has been from David Seymour asking for applications for the Pharmacy Council in particular. We spoke about the Pharmacy Council last week and the issues that, with their diversity policies and all kinds of nonsense that they're putting forward as guidelines for pharmacists. He has very specifically repeated his call, David Seymour, saying, we have vacancies. I need to appoint people to the Pharmacy Council. I need good people who are going to make these changes, to put their names forward, to put in their applications. So do that. Go put in your applications. Go and get in touch with David Seymour and say, well, I would like to help you. Can you give me a commitment to that? I'm actually going to be able to get things done. And that's just one very small, very specific example that would then need to be replicated across all of these agencies. As you say, William, a cultural change, it has to be done very deliberately. It can't just be, oh yes, we'll change the law. We'll just appoint someone onto for instance, the Waitangi Tribunal, who then, like Richard Prebble, ends up saying, oh, I didn't have the support I needed. I'm walking away from this. It can work, but we have some momentum here, and we just need to keep moving on it.
Yeah, and an important thing to note here is that there's more than one aspect of wokeness and one type of group you have to sort of there seems to be a divide in the government between people who want to create more separation between Maori institutions and Maorification and the public sector, and other people who want to create more distance and separation between a lot of the LGBTQ and rainbow groups and rainbow ideas in the government. So these are both sort of aspects of wokeness, I think. You know, pandering to sexual LGBTQ identities and ideology, and then pandering to Maori and other ethnic minorities. And both of them are a kind of a problem. And I feel like some political parties are more keen to go after one, and some other political parties in the government are more keen to go after the other. But I think we really need to go after both of these things. And some of the promising things that are happening to do with defunding the Whānau Ora Commissioning Agency, for example. So it's not just the people in the government, it's the relationships that the public sector has with a lot of these organizations outside the government as well, who they're using to consult with. The partnership arrangements that they've got, the people they're talking to, that are helping inform the policy on a regular basis. A lot of these relationships have really gotten too close, where it's sort of it's reached a point where it's sort of government capture. The government has sort of been captured partly by a lot of this Maori iwi ideology. You've got everywhere you go in the public sector, you've got this you have to put Maori stuff into all your papers, and there are times when that's appropriate, but a lot of the time the Maori perspective on things isn't really relevant. Not because there's something wrong with the Maori perspective, but it's just the Maori perspective and the non-Maori perspective on like building roads and infrastructure isn't really that different. You know, it's this it's there's only really one kind of way of looking at those type of things. And similarly with these LGBTQ groups, you know, a lot of this stuff is contestable. You know, like they have a lot of relationships with the LGBTQ groups, but they keep the socially conservative groups at arm's length. And I don't see why it should be that way around. At the very least, there should be a parity between those two groups. There's two different views there. I mean, I think there's good reason to think that a lot of the stuff these LGBT groups are doing is harmful in a real objective and empirically verifiable way. But if you say that, you get accused of sort of bigotry and these sorts of things. So that's the problem. I think we need more separation from both those groups.
Well, the examples that you've given, as I, the leftists, as you say, accuse you of fighting a culture war. But of course, this is after they have spent decades, the better part of a century, waging a war on our culture, waging a war on our values, wage essentially a civilizational war against us. And then the moment we turn things around just a little bit, the moment that people start to realize what's going on in greater numbers, the moment there's political pushback, well, then they recoil and they complain. Oh, what's there's a culture war. Why we don't need these culture wars? Why are we importing culture wars? And of course the this is them projecting what they have been doing to us for decades, realizing that of course now potentially we have the upper hand when they make those complaints. And I don't really think there's the opportunity to have parity on this because it's essentially it's existential. It's like there can only be one. The world isn't big enough for the two of us type of situation when you're dealing with these ideologies. They have no, there's no room for competition.
Yeah, well, I mean, you might be right about that. I mean, I tend to lean in that direction a little bit as well. Like, I think we can decide on this sort of stuff empirically, right? The LGBTQ stuff is objectively harmful. Okay, people say, oh, identity politics is harmful. Well, you can look into the literature, and not all identities are equal. A strong sense of ethnic identity and a strong sense of religious identity positively correlated with positive life outcomes. LGBTQ identity is correlated with negative life outcomes. These people are more likely to be mentally ill, more likely to report worse subjective well-being, etc. The lifestyles, and it's cor they say it's correlated with persecution, but at best that's only partly true. It's because the lifestyles themselves tend to result in poorer life outcomes, and that's really the issue. So at a certain point, you know, the government discourages things that are harmful. It discourages drinking, discourages smoking, discourages speeding. We have government programs. This is a lot of what public policy is. It's doing research. It's finding things that are harmful. It's thinking about measures you can do to mitigate them. The damage that has been done to Western society because of the destruction of norms around sexuality, relationships, and marriage is probably much, much greater than the damage that has been done by alcohol or smoking or speeding in your car. And so there's every reason for the government to seriously look at that and to see what it can do to address the damage that has been done by the destruction of these traditional norms.
Now, to pull back a thread that you already alluded to, the next item on my list was talking a bit about defunding of John Tamahiri's organizations and the political moves that the Maori Party have made as well, going in question time, asking why in particular Tamahiri's organizations have been defunded, saying it's going to cost hundreds of jobs, when really the contracts have simply shifted to different tribal organizations in these cases. I mean, this is obviously a good thing, but what do you see as the consequences of pulling these contracts away? Because there seems to be, I don't even need to say that there seems to be, there clearly is a lot of corruption happening in this space. Is moving these contracts with greater scrutiny being on these contracts, are we going to see better outcomes that are not going to be politically motivated in around these issues of particularly of funding of community programs for Maori?
Well, you would hope so. I mean, what the Whanauora Commissioning Agency does is that it takes the money from the government and then it doles it out to the Maori health providers on the ground in the community. So it's sort of like an intermediary. And Whanauora is still going to happen. It's just that there's going to be a different organisation being that intermediary. Now, what the opportunities that have been provided to John Tamahiri here are huge because he's been the overseer of how a lot of government money has been spent, not just through Whanauora, but through the Waipariura Trust, through all these different things that he's a part of. He sits atop the peak of this organization and he gets to control where the funding goes. And he's used that to build, which is against the rules, to build a Maori political movement. There's nothing wrong, in my view, with building a Maori political movement, but there is something very wrong with building a Maori political movement by using taxpayer money and by using money from a charitable trust when that's against the rules. And that's what he's done. He's been put in this position of power where he can do that and he's abused it for political ends. So I think John Tamahiri is really the biggest example of this sort of bad behaviour. But I think there's a lot of kind of similar behaviour happening at a smaller level right throughout the government. With a lot of these Maori organizations, a lot of these rainbow organizations, and a lot of other types of organizations as well. And we really need to call time on that sort of behavior and really review a lot of the stuff that's going on here to stop this this blurring of the lines between political and advocacy stuff and what's stuff that's really in the public interest.
Along a similar vein, I saw just today, and I don't have the details in front of me now, but it's a similar story with these rainbow organizations. So, promoting transsexualism in at the council level, doing all of these events, and this was exposed in Wellington, where say hundreds of thousands of dollars had been sent to these organizations to do so-called education on these issues, but really it's a funneling of money. As I think I may have called it many months ago, when we had a similar subject to this, a sort of basically a money laundering operation. And that seems, as you said, that seems to be the case for all of these DEI programs, whether it's in terms of Maori funding or whether it's in terms of this LGBT funding. A lot of it is about political rewards for ideological support, left wing, basically left wing politicians, left wing councillors, left wing bureaucrats rewarding their left wing friends in the broader community to build up their own political movements from and their own activist organizations, their own lobby groups, all of that using public funds, using taxpayer money. So we're basically, paying for our own destruction.
Yeah, it's jobs for the boys, and the left have done that. It feels wrong to call it effective, but in a way, it has been effective in terms of create that like they use public money to build networks and advocacy groups and political groups that support left wing causes, and as long as that doesn't get called out, that's a very effective political strategy. But it is improper, and the taxpayer has every right to be outraged about it. And I think we really need to take action now to sort of roll up a lot of these publicly funded advocacy networks when it's
And
not really
the
appropriate.
yeah, and the both the political and social onflows of being able to unravel the web behind behind these woke organizations. If the war on woke is successful, then yeah, the ramifications could be huge, well beyond anything that we think about because of the amount of money that's involved. It's like US aid being wound down, and suddenly organizations around the world collapse because they've, you know, these left-wing organizations have been funded by the US government. It's happening in New Zealand, not necessarily by the US government, but it's our own government doing this here as well. And so, you know, that would be a massive win if we're able to bring things across into, you know, I guess if we are able to win the next election, as it were, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Because I'd like to bring up just one more woke thing before we talk about, you know, re-election fundamentals as our final topic. The arrests that were made this week of Destiny Church members over the protests at the library, the so-called drag queen story hour at the libraries in Auckland. What do you see there? Is this the police doing their job? Was there violence? And yeah, or is this again political targeting of protesters by the police?
I have no information that it's political targeting by the police. I'm going to assume at this point, until I get information otherwise, that there really was violence committed here, and that the police have are just doing their job and arresting people who committed violence. I support Brian Tamaki and what he's doing. I think he's brave and he's on the right side. These LGBTQ and rainbow movements are doing harm to society, and it's right to oppose them, but. And what I would say to Brian is you have to oppose them in the right way, because if you engage in violence and if you're engaged in a sort of thugs veto type behavior, that's going to reflect badly on you and turn people off. So I'm on your side. I'm just encouraging you to keep everything as clean and tidy and above board as possible.
And yeah, just to be clear, it's been four arrests made, and they've said potentially more to come, but four arrests made on charges of assault. So what the extent of these alleged assaults is, we don't really know. It could be an assault on the, you know, in the sense of was Liz Gunn recently, who was charged with, convicted of assault for touching somebody's shoulder, you know, before that conviction was overturned. So we don't know if this is something that was essentially a non-issue, that we would say would be a non-issue, that would be a farcical interpretation of assault, or whether this was actually serious physical altercation that resulted in people being genuinely hurt. So, yeah. This is something that will come up in future shows as, you know, those cases are defended and prosecuted, and you know, until then, we'll also see, you know, what other actions Destiny Church and Brian Tamaki continue to take. But I would echo your concerns there to say, hey, the focus needs to be on the good optics, on making sure this is clean, and of course, you know, that's something that, you know, what kind of ramifications this will have, we're not going to know for a long time still to come. So the
It's
final.
important to, it's important to point out here, just quickly, that all of the left-wing protest movements, or at least the vast majority of them, it's very difficult to organize them and keep everyone under tight control and make sure that no one ever commits violence. People often go off the rails, and there's been a violence associated with a lot of the left-wing protest movements. We shouldn't condone violence. We should always be against it. But anytime you've got a large number of people who are passionate about a cause together, like it's you know, some of the stuff might happen. Shouldn't excuse it. We should always try and minimize it, but it does happen.
And quickly then on election fundamentals, for the you know, the coalition polling has been declining in the last month or two, you know, since especially since the end of last year. The polling of the National Party has been in quite drastic decline. You know, polling, they're sort of polling almost at, you know, well, almost at 40, I say, in the high 30s, 38. 37, now down to about 33, 34, even as low as 30% in recent polls. And if this continues, the Labour Party would have an easy re-election next year. Now, there's still a very long way to go. Is this polling looking bad for National because of the changes, because of policy the government is doing? Do you see this as economic issues? And it may be worth, looking at some drastic swings that we're seeing as well with the Green Party and the Māori Party in particular. They seem to have very, very big range of polling results. Say in the last two polls, the Greens somewhere between 10 and 15, the Māori Party somewhere between 3 and 6.5. I mean, these are massive variants on the left, and more stable polling on the right that doesn't look very good for the right wing.
I think it's probably largely to do with the economy, the poor economic outcomes, which is probably still a result of the economic situation that National inherited. I think they could have done some things better. They could have maybe worked a bit harder in the first budget to bring some of the spending under control and things like that. But really, they're suffering from the poor economy that was bequeathed to them by the previous government still. And I think things will pick up in terms of the economy, and when that happens, the polling should pick up too. But another factor I think in here is probably, I mean, I see some positive signs with them turning around and doing some stuff on these culture war issues, as we've been discussing, but probably there is a feeling among some of the government supporters that they haven't moved far enough and fast enough on some of these culture war issues, the woke stuff, trying to get some real institutional change, de-wokeification in the public sector, and those sorts of things. And it's possible that that is alienating and turning off some of their supporters. That's certainly the impression you get from looking online for a lot of the people who are the government supporters becoming agitated that the government isn't doing more on the culture war front. So I think given that there's a bad economy, it would have been a good time to get stuck in on those issues and sort of make that the conversation since the economy is bad anyway.
Yeah, as you said, they should have moved harder on the economy, because there was always going to be a recession. So if they had just made sure to get things over with properly, then we wouldn't be having this conversation right now, I think. And yet, I do see things smoothing out over the year. That would be my prediction, is that by the time you get to the end of this year, the government would be in a better position. Because it is the economy that tends to win and lose these elections, unless there are some things very wrong in your society, which there are in ours. But yet the economy, for some reason, always seems to dominate when it comes to votes. So I've certainly found that. That's simply it. People want to be optimistic about the government, and the government isn't really giving them enough to be optimistic about. And so if they want to turn their polling around, hey, Luxon, if he's and we talked about sort of the rumors that Luxon might be getting rolled, that they'll be looking to replace him. I mean, that is possible if the numbers keep being really, really bad. But at the moment, I think that for Luxon, it's basically a warning to get moving, and it seems he's gotten that message this week, where he's actually he's made some overtures in the right direction, and hopefully he doubles down on that, and then we can see the polling situation improve.
I'm hopeful that that's what happens.
All right, we'll keep you covered on the weekly roundup as the months go on, and I'm very much looking forward to that. Like I said, I'm hoping for the best. I'm very positive. I don't want things to get bad. And now there has been lots of international news as well, but we're going to get back to those next week, since some of those are moving very, very quickly. I'd rather let them settle down a little bit longer before we get into those. So thank you for listening, everyone. Thank you for watching, those of you who are enjoying the visual format on RCR Plus. And as always, you can send us your feedback to inbox@realitycheck.radio. We'll see you next week.
See you later.